You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some.
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Greg Miller.
I'm very excited for this show.
Why?
We got a great cast.
Do we?
We're doing it at the beginning of the week.
That remains to be seen.
We're beginning of the week, so we got tons of energy.
Yeah.
Exciting.
We got to try something new here. Listeners, we've been doing GameScoop before. Jesus, almost 6 years now.
Yeah,
our schedules have changed. We just find that lately Fridays are hard to get our act together.
Yeah,
mostly because we're just kind of lazy and ready hungover to start the weekend. Yeah, and hungover. That's true.
The problem is anytime there's a day off or there's a half day, it's always on Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so why it makes it difficult. Falls behind in the numbers sometimes. Yeah.
So we'll see. We may have to move days. But anyway,
if you wanted GameScoop on a specific day, what day would you want it, listeners?
What's the best day?
Email
What's the best
us at gamescoop@ign.com.
That's where you can always reach us. gamescoop@ign.com. Colin Moriarty is also here.
What's up?
And looking very dapper.
Thank you.
Went on a shopping spree this weekend.
Yep.
Bought himself some big boy clothes. Yep.
My big boy shopping spree this weekend.
He's wearing a buttoned down collared shirt, and it looks very nice.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Dashing.
He gave me a fashion show last night at the house.
Yeah.
He came out in this like nice flannel button down shirt, but then he was just wearing flannel pajama pants.
It's too bad I don't get to see that.
I looked like I was like straight out of like a helmet or an Alice in Chains video with the shirt I was wearing. I'll show you. You'll understand.
I always liked, I love Helmet, and I loved how like their look like never matched the sound of their music. They had that sort of like preppy like college kid look.
And definitely.
But then they're like totally hardcore band.
Hard as nails.
Yeah, they're great. Andrew Goldfarb is also here.
I am. I look like crap today. Sorry.
You don't look like crap.
I didn't wear a button-down shirt. I didn't get the memo.
Neither did Greg or I. I mean,
that's true.
You look the same as you always look.
That's
true. And it turns out, Damon, not only does he look the same in real life and in photos, also in the movies he appears in. We had a Walking Dead watch party, right, on Sunday. And afterwards, we wanted to find something on Netflix. So we're looking around for a bad Netflix movie or something funny to watch with a group of people. And we kept going by movies. And Goldfarb was like, oh, I'm in that one. And so we stopped on Morning Glory. And he's literally wearing this outfit. I mean, they wardrobed him for sure. But he's definitely in the background in a fucking hoodie and a t-shirt just sitting there on his iPhone.
Wow,
like, this is you every day. And then what was the other one? The other terrible movie where you're in a lunch line. Also just dressed the same.
Winning season, yeah.
Jeez. Wow.
I still haven't seen an extra appearance of yours.
We'll dig through.
I think we all had just enough drinks to where it blew our minds. Everybody's like,
I think I offended Andrew that day, by the way, because I came home. I was out, went out with Baradon for dinner.
video producer. And then Mr. Goldfarb asked, he's like, Colin, you want to come hang out with us? And I was like, nah, not really. And I just walked into my room.
I explained that Colin, and this is not a made-up number, Colin says and has admitted he likes to be alone 90% of the time. And so he wanted to come home and watch Celebrity Apprentice and not be bothered with the 30 people.
The house full of people, yeah. I got back by eating a slice of your pizza.
That's fine. Whatever. Game scoop.
Anyway, welcome, listeners, to another episode of Game Scoop. You know, I think Mass Effect is sold out.
It's sold out finally?
Yeah.
Like Dr. Pepper ships in it and stuff?
Yeah. Andrew and I were talking about this last week. Yeah, so remember close. When Mass Effect was a Microsoft exclusive and it was this sort of like high science fiction
totally
single player RPG?
Boring.
No, it was awesome. Everyone loved it. It was great.
Yeah, no one liked the original Mass Effect.
Ooh, let's talk to this thing. Ooh. That was all Mass Effect 1.
That was great. Just like it.
What, the Reaper? No, not Reapers. What is she's a... What is she?
Well, who?
She? She's joined a league of people that never had a human in it before. What is she?
Oh.
Not Paragon.
Oh,
not
when you say she, you mean Spectre.
Spectre.
Oh, yeah.
Spectre.
He became the Spectre. Yeah.
Yes. I was thinking like Leon.
Commander Shepard.
Human Spectre before. Well, the first 15 minutes there is. Oh, my God. Fuck that game. Mass Effect 2, awesome.
I don't know how you can like one and not the other personally, but okay.
I don't know. The Mass Effect of today is, you know, cross-platform. That's fine. That's great. More people should play it. But the PR, the publicity stunts that are going on with this game.
It's crazy.
Well, let's send the game off into space. Let's put weird celebrities in the game. Let's add multiplayer.
So, like, Mass Effect 1 sold, I think, 1 million copies in its first week. I looked it up. And Mass Effect 2 was 2 million. So those did well, like very well, totally respectable numbers on 360. But this is going to be the first like multi-platform launch for a Mass Effect game. Mm-hmm. And like, oh man, is EA putting money behind it?
What's that 2 million number for Mass Effect 2? That's just for the
that's
like total today,
the,
or
I think in the first week.
So just then, on 360.
Yes. Yep.
So that's really good for it.
That's extremely
game.
Good. But I mean with the money they're putting in to Mass Effect 3, I mean, I think like. So Battlefield 3 sold 10 million so far, and I feel like that's the kind of number EA has to be looking for. With
I know
the
that they were
putting into it,
as you know, we would consider Mass Effect 2 a success. Both critically and commercially. But I know that EA was disappointed with its sales, so that's why they're doing this big push with Mass Effect 3, and I'm seeing it marketed a lot more than the previous games were.
Yeah, during The Walking Dead, they were like, and now stay tuned for Mass Effect trailer.
Well, they did it at the very beginning, like, welcome to this week's Walking Dead, brought to you by Mass Effect 3, and look for an exclusive trailer during this episode.
So what is this, the sending copies of the game into space stunt?
So there aren't that many details yet, but...
Has this happened yet?
I think it's this week they're actually launching them, and... Yeah, it's in 6 cities. It's like San Francisco, New York, a couple overseas. And yeah, if you find a copy of Mass Effect when it comes back down from space, you get it a week early.
I don't want to tip our cards here.
Yeah.
IGN's getting one of those copies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to find it in the bay.
Yeah. IGN's getting one of those copies today.
When it
Please, I want to see it.
Colin Moriarty is reviewing Mass Effect 3 for us.
Yes.
What are you going to give it?
I don't know. We'll find out when I play it.
How are you feeling about Mass Effect these days?
I'm a little sour on it. I mean, I love the series. I think it's one of the great franchises
too.
Of all time. I what I always liked about it was that it was really like you said, it's sci-fi, but it's really thoughtful and just the little things in the game always impress me. Like I always explain to people, the Mass Effect itself is a clever way of explaining how you can possibly travel faster than light by reducing the mass of something to zero, which is theoretically the only way it could possibly happen. So, at the very core of the game is, like, really sound science, obviously created by, you know, bright PhDs. And
they're doctors.
Yeah. And you know, they have great writers, Drew Karpyshyn, and all those dudes are the real deal. But
not anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of agree with you that the game has become, you know, so big that I feel like that they've had to try to live up to something that Mass Effect never was, which to me is personify with the multiplayer, which is something that is totally and completely unnecessary. I don't care how good or bad it is; it's just totally and completely unnecessary in a Mass Effect game. It's not Mass Effect was two Mass Effect games are all about single player RPG experience, and then in the third game you put a horde mode ripoff basically into Mass Effect 3, and I played it. I played it like in October and November in Las Vegas, and I was not impressed.
Really?
I don't know if they've. I hope they've cleaned it up since then.
Yeah, I've heard people tweeting about it saying they like it.
So. But you know, to me, it's just that specific thing, adding multiplayer where it doesn't belong, really pissed the shit out of me. Just as a fan of the series. Now whether it's good or bad, you know, remains to be seen. If it's great, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll affect the nature of the single player campaign and how good or bad it is. But I don't know, that just in premise, that really bothered me, and I know other people felt the same.
I mean, even other than the multiplayer, there's like different modes of single player. So
that's
like,
what I'm worried about.
Yeah, it's like story mode, action mode, and RPG mode, right. And they like play differently. Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. Like Justin was talking about.
Yeah, so in the demo, if you choose like story mode,
one of them, I don't know which it is, but like one of them basically plays the game for you. From what I understand, like Justin
maybe it's action mode. It like makes all the makes dialogue decisions for you.
Yeah,
and so you can just get to the action. And then the story mode is like the opposite of that. It's like I don't know.
Is there normal mode? Just the way it was before?
This is what I'm worried about. This is like, I feel like they're just really desperate to go broad with Mass Effect 3 and make it really mainstream and sell 10 million copies. But hopefully they're not ruining the game in their attempt to do so.
They have like a tie-in iPhone app. Like they're going crazy with it. It's very different than what Mass Effect was before. So that might not be bad, but I mean like it is definitely different.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be. I always go into every review with an open mind, and in fact, Mass Effect 3 is like a game I'm more excited about than almost anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to get into the adventure, into the story, and see what the hell happens to Earth, and see what comes of Shepard and stuff like that. But I don't know. To me, it's there's just all this. I like the pack. I don't want to say it was no frills, because obviously it had plenty of frills. It's just a single player game, but it seems like they've just gone overboard with what Mass Effect. Like I would have rather them add 10 hours or something to the single player campaign as opposed to like work on this. Multiplayer Mass Effect game, like I don't understand what the hell that is. Like Mass Effect is a single player game. It's a single player adventure. It's so single player oriented that you draw your character from the first game through the second game into the third game, and now suddenly out of nowhere you're going to just play multiplayer in the third game. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to appeal to people, and I don't understand why no one asked for multiplayer in Mass Effect. I'm just going to throw
except
that out
except for
there.
EA.
Well, that's just, I mean, EA is, you know, they look at numbers and they say games with multiplayer sell better.
Yep.
So
I mean, it's worth pointing out, like, they've stressed many, many, many times that, like, you can completely avoid playing the multiplayer. Like, it's not at all required
and
to
there's also
the
that Kinect functionality in there, too, which I feel is unnecessarily.
So adrenaline rush! On!
You see what I'm getting out of here, Greg?
There's a lot of stuff. I don't know.
It's like Mass Effect was perfect. Yeah. It didn't need all this
two
stuff.
Was perfect.
Yeah, come on, you know, okay. I'm saying the game.
I'm saying the franchise
the whole
in
thing,
general.
Mass Effect 1 and 2, they were perfect, except for the bugs in the first one, but, you know. That didn't need all this extra stuff that's being added for Mass Effect.
You didn't need all this. You didn't need all this. You liked it. You just wanted to see them finesse what was already there, not try to.
I just wanted to see them finish that
story. Yeah,
because really, it's really significant. One of our listeners wrote in to point out how significant Mass Effect 3 is. This is Austin Thompson. He points out that no other game has done what Mass Effect 3 is attempting. The Mass Effect 3's gameplay or multiplayer aren't what existing fans care about. This is the first time a game's importance rests exclusively on its plot, not gameplay. Mass Effect fans know what to expect from the gameplay, but they have no idea what the ending will be like or what will result from their previous choices. And I can't believe this isn't more talked about, what the final choice in the Mass Effect trilogy will be. It's true. It's, you know, like Mass Effect 2 was significant in that it read your previous save, and all of these important decisions that you made in this past game played out in different ways for different people. So that, you know, now you've got two games to build on for going into Mass Effect 3, two games worth of decisions.
Well, and plus, like, that's what they're, like, so this galactic readiness is, like, affected by the multiplayer and the iPhone app and all that stuff. And, like, that's supposed to determine what ending you can get. And, like, that's more than the multiplayer gameplay itself. That's what concerns me. Because, like, I played through the first Mass Effect, like, 5 times, I think, because I got all the achievements in it. And then second one I played through twice to get through all the difficulties and stuff. And it's like, this one, like, I'm not going to play it, like, 15 times to get all the possible endings and stuff. Like, that scares me too much.
I hope it starts with me pregnant with Garrus's baby.
You, Greg Miller, not your character.
Now I turn it on and it's all of a sudden I just get a bellyache.
That would be good.
Yeah, speaking of that,
I would play that.
I mean, this no disrespect to Jessica Chobot, but it bugs me that she's in the game because we know her. It's not like she's like a celebrity that's, you know, like Seth Green that's in the game. It's like this is somebody that I know personally, and that's gonna like be weird, like run into this person in the game. Like, why did they have to use their likeness? You know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want you to be in the game, Greg, that'd be weird. Like, Greg's in Mass Effect. Like, what? I'm supposed to be in this space.
Yeah, it's
sci-fi
epic.
Like, now, this person I know I'm talking to.
It's interesting that they kept her likeness. because I don't even think Seth Green's character looks exactly like Seth Green. He looks like Seth Green. Seth Green, don't get me wrong. But it's like anytime you give a character a voice or stuff, you're not seeing it so much like L.A. Noire does it, right? Where L.A. Noire is like, those are those characters. Those are those people. They're playing roles. Whereas, yeah, Jessica looks like Jessica, which is really weird.
No, I'm actually bothered by it, too, just because, I don't want... I don't want people in the industry in my games, you know, like I just don't want
my friends in my game.
Yeah. Like, I just don't understand. Like you said, like Greg or anyone, it's like it, at some point it becomes like too circular for me.
I'll tell you right now, if we could get Roy Bahat in a game, I want that.
Yeah. That'd be different. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with her. Like, I just don't want anyone in the industry shouldn't really be in a game except for me in Fallout 3. But other than that.
So that's like, that's just your name in a game. Yeah. Like, that's cool. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. But I'm like, it's just
her name sounds like an alien. So if they could just name an alien after her, that'd
be... Wait, her name in the game isn't Jessica Chobot, is it?
No, I'm just saying her name, Chobot, sounds like a Star Wars creature.
To me, that move seemed, you know, I'm happy for her, but that move to me seemed like, you know, for a game that's trying to go broad, like you said, that seems like a super insular, obscure move that no one's really going to understand. Yeah. Well, unless you're like in... So maybe that's the point. Maybe it won't bother.
Yeah, exactly. 95% of the people probably won't know who she. I guess I don't know that based on numbers, but you know, aren't going to immediately pick up. Oh man, there's Jessica Chobot from G4 and IGN.
The funnier thing to me is Freddie Prinze Jr. because it's like, this is a guy who hasn't been in movies in like 5 years.
Exactly.
He's in season 8 of 24, which I'm watching right now.
God. It's weird that they're dropping in these characters now in the finale kind of thing. You know what I mean? And that's what we're talking about.
More
all these weird things,
stuff to add to the game that didn't need.
Yeah. Well, I suspect that the entire Fate of the Galaxy will actually hinge on Freddie Prinze Jr.
I hope so.
I'm almost positive. Good She's All That references in there.
Our listener Andrew Hanwell has another concern about Mass Effect 3 that we haven't touched on yet. He says, even though I'm very excited for its release, I'm wondering how the game will balance the main campaign with side quests. The whole game is about saving all sentient life in the galaxy from impending extinction. How can I worry about fetch quests when I have to unite millions of aliens to defeat the Reapers?
That's a good point.
Do you know if there will be side quests like Mass Effect 1 and 2 in the new game?
I'm sure there will be. And it's funny because I've thought about that too in passing. Just like the Cataclysm.
That's any game though, really.
Yeah. Like, the Cataclysm though must... I was talking to Casey, our editor-in-chief, and I was, you know, I'm reviewing the game. And I was like, I've been on complete blackout with Mass Effect 3 for the last 6 months. Like, I don't want to know anything. You know, I know some meteors hit the Earth or something at some point in one of the trailers. That's about it. But I don't know, like, when these things happen. And I'm kind of hoping that it, like, to not ruin the narrative, it happens later in the game or there's some sort of, you know, occupation of Earth or whatever that you have to deal with later. And so you can go about fetching credits for some criminal underlord.
Aliens are attacking England. All right, but I got to mine all this ore out of this planet. I'll be there in a bit.
That's the thing, though. There's two ways to do that. Like, a lot of JRPGs are like that. It's like, oh, my God, you have to do this ASAP.
I just think that's
every running around.
You always have to save the world, but you always, like, you know, there's always other stuff to do.
The alternative is, like, a timer, like Dead Rising or...
Majora's Mask.
Yeah, like, I hate that.
Majora's Mask was dope because of that.
Mask was dope.
I love Majora's Mask, but...
Best Zelda game.
Again.
Yeah, I said it.
I hope Shepard gets to keep rewinding.
I'll second that.
That'd be great. And wearing crazy masks and stuff.
Anyway, I, you know, Mass Effect 1 and 2 were so good. I will be shocked if Mass Effect 3 is not also great. But I feel like all this extra stuff that's been added in there, I'll just ignore it.
Yeah.
And just play through. I just want to play through like I have the first two games.
The other big thing is all the DLC. Like, someone added up that, like, if you buy the collector's edition and the art book that comes with DLC and the action figure that comes with DLC and all the different things, it's like $900 to buy all of that. Like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. $900 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Not if you love Mass Effect.
Assassin's Creed has become an annual franchise. New Assassin's Creed game every year for the past 3 years, I think.
Yeah, right.
I think the first one was like 2007. And then...
2009, right, for 2?
Yeah, 2.
And then 10, yeah, for Brotherhood and
Revelations.
So now we'll get a new Assassin's Creed this year, but this one's going to be the actual Assassin's Creed 3.
Booyah!
Which will be good. That's the one I've been waiting for. I never got around to playing Brotherhood, which I know you liked. Never got to play Revelations, which everyone seems to be like,
bored as hell with Revelations.
Yeah, that seems to be across the board, everyone's experience.
From the beginning, that cart chase in the beginning is so bad.
That was it, man. Those first two DNA sequences were so boring. Second one, all right, now we're going to do real-time strategies. I just want to stab people and steal stuff. What are you doing? Yeah. I want to buy all the art in this town.
can't get into that series. Can't do
Not
it.
Not at all. I loved two.
I played the second one for like an hour or so, and... the one thing that really got me was I was climbing up buildings and not really doing anything. Yeah. And I kept like, you know, I'm like, I really should be pressing the X button maybe or something. And then I would just launch myself off the building and die or whatever. And I was like, I can't play this. I can't do this. So I just stopped and I never went back. But I've been hearing some rumblings about the one of the Assassin's Creed's in development.
Yeah, so Assassin's Creed 3. Is coming this year, coming October. I guess they already have a release date that they announced during their earnings call, right?
Yeah.
October 30th.
Yep, and on that earnings call, he also said they've been working on it for 3 years, whoa. Which means this is the team from 1 and 2, probably.
Is that just a
whoa? Whoa, that's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. So we know a lot about what Assassin's Creed 3 is, but I wish we could say stuff. We can't say anything. I don't know when we'll be able to either.
Let's just say Mass Effect 3's ending won't be as conclusive as cross publisher. They're gonna get up there and find a piece of Eden in the Reaper, and all hell's gonna break loose.
I was, by the way, just as a quick aside, Mass Effect. Before we completely abandon that, I do hope that one of the endings is that we lose. I just want to. I want to.
One
say,
of the endings is.
Yeah, like that everything's totally. Lost. It's over, because you know.
That'd be awesome.
I don't want to spoil. Well, you know what? It's too bad. If you haven't seen the end of Battlestar Galactica, you can turn it off now. Do you guys care about Battlestar Galactica here?
The show?
Yeah.
I was really disappointed by the way it all turned out.
Yeah terrible ending.
So I wanted. I just want to say that I wanted Battlestar Galactica to end where the humans lost. Like that would have been much better. That would have been the ballsiest ending, and that maybe the Cylons were actually the humans. Like now, like they find Earth and then we somehow become like their children like a long time ago or something. Something cooler than what happened. Anything would have been cooler than what happened.
Yeah, anything would have been better than 10 episodes about like religion and all that.
Yeah, so Mass Effect 3 I think is like the time for sci-fi redemption where, you know, things don't work out.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'd be down with that. That would be good. Anyway, Assassin's Creed 3 coming later this year, October 30th. Strange release date. It's not really a Halloween game, but...
dress up like Ezio.
Usually they want to release stuff like Splatterhouse and... I don't know
yeah,
what
please
came
release
out.
Another Splatterhouse.
I'm just saying. Actually, I don't even think that made a Halloween release. I think that ended up being
November.
Right? Yeah.
What was that Sega Kinect game came out around?
Nightmares or whatever it was called?
Yeah, House of Nightmares.
Rise of Nightmares. Oh, God, that game was delightfully terrible.
Remember you and I laughing at the demo the guy was giving us? We felt so bad.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad. Those are the worst. Oh, man. Anyway. Warp is finally out on Xbox Live Arcade. My game of PAX East 2011. It's finally out. It's really good. Actually, it turned out really well. I give it an 8.5 for IGN. If you haven't been following it, this one is the game where you are the alien escaping an underwater laboratory where experiments are being performed on you.
I like that.
I know, right?
Gets my will.
It's a revenge story. You have the ability to warp. You can teleport a few spaces ahead. So you can warp through walls, warp into objects, warp into people, make them explode from the outside. It's awesome. So the gameplay is a lot of stealth, sort of like old school Metal Gear Solid stuff, and some puzzle solving. And I really liked it. It was good. But so I gave it an 8.5. I was leaning a little bit higher than that until I played the final boss. And the final boss was so frustrating and not fun at all. It actually made me lower my score a little bit. And I was wondering if you guys had ever encountered that, where like the end of a game was what turned you off to it.
In a review, I mean, there's plenty of endings back in the day that were ridiculously cheap and frustrating.
Yeah.
And sat through. But I don't know if... you know what? Well, I mean, obviously I didn't review it, but the way Resistance 3 ended ruined what would have otherwise been an even better, like, probably the best shooter of all time for me. But, yeah.
Is it something you can describe without... Is it, like, spoilery or...
Yeah, I mean,
I would like to know what it is.
These people should have gotten their act together. Again, skip a minute and a half in if you don't want to hear the ending of Resistance 3.
Yeah. Okay. No, Resistance has always been predicated on getting worse. Like, the situation's getting worse and worse. Like, at the end of Fall of Man, there's, like, little victories, and Resistance 2 is little victories, but also, like, terrible things happen. At the end of Resistance 2, the main character is murdered, you know? So it's, like, it always gets worse and worse and worse. Mm. And in Resistance 2, you're playing as the guy who murdered the main character in Resistance 2. So it had this whole... you know, premise to be even darker and more dire, and the Chimera were going to win and stuff like that. And then you go through the game and it's fucking really dark and really, you know, the Chimera are winning, everyone's dead, it's cold as shit, and like they're terraforming the planet. You go to New York City, it's covered in like feet of snow, and then suddenly you like get into like one of their ships or whatever, one of their devices, you destroy it, and then everyone and everything's better all of a sudden. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding
me? You close one portal and that's it.
Yeah, like, and then it's just like okay, the chimera cut off from Earth, and so like the only ones that are left are now feral chimera and stuff like that, and maybe
we're still really fucking terrifying and huge and eating your people, but you're just putting your life back together.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, that was like that game for like 8 hours was so fucking good, and then the last hour I was like, are you like, this is it, this is how you're gonna end the series?
That sucks.
That's no good. Yeah. For me it was the original BioShock was like this amazing immersive great game.
Oh, and yeah, like the last boss fight is
it's easy and dumb and has like, it just doesn't fit with the game at all. Like,
They should have made you fight Ayn Rand at the end of.
Yeah, I know, right? That would have been better.
Her reanimated corpse.
Arkham Asylum's ending didn't really match.
The Joker.
Yeah, that was really.
It's because they're trying to put like it's really like an example we talk about it in Drake's Fortune too. It's like they try to or Among Thieves is even a better example where they try to like pigeonhole an end boss fight where there really doesn't even need there doesn't even need to be an end boss, and you kind of got that more in Uncharted 3.
I thought you did very much so in Uncharted 3 because in I won't spoil or I guess we could again jump a minute and a half in. You know, just because it's something that's a fight that would happen the way that would happen. You know what I mean? There was no I'm gonna drink blue sap now and
Among Thieves
be
was
invincible.
Fucking annoying.
Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like you're just fighting a guy with a knife. Okay, that would happen.
Yeah, because some it doesn't fit sometimes. Like when you think about an old Castlevania game, like obviously you're gonna fight Dracula. That's the way shit goes down in a Castlevania game. But in one of these like newer, you know, narrative based games, you don't need a boss battle.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to fight Marlo at the end, see if
it was just a fist fight. She's just like, down in one punch.
In a lot of ways, Arkham City did it better. A boss fight well. Like they had well, again, spoilers. Like geez, man, we're just throwing all these games.
It's fine.
But Clayface is at the end of Arkham City, right? But it wasn't like he was. More hard than he should have been anywhere else, right? Yeah. He was a normal difficulty. There was no, like, I'm going to come back again. And then they let the Joker parts play out through cutscenes. And even, like, Hugo Strange didn't get into a giant fucking mech and do anything. You just knocked him out once, and then what about your business?
Yeah, that was a smart way to do it. And, like, Clayface made it make sense. You know, that was, like, that justified why you'd be fighting a big boss battle thing. So I was okay with that.
Yeah, the rules have changed. Developers are struggling with boss fights these days. They, you know, obviously they were horribly out of place in Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Different studio did them, right?
Yeah, they outsourced the boss fights in that game.
We don't know what we're doing.
If the internal studio didn't want to put boss fights or didn't do boss fights, then they probably didn't belong in the game at all. You know, if they had a vision, it seems to me like, I don't know, I mean, this is speculative, but it seems like they had a vision and this was the game and then someone came in and were like, you need boss battles. And they're like, we don't have any time to do boss battles. So they're like, all right, we'll just have this other studio do them. And then you just kind of put them in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, thanks, guys.
Really weird.
Yeah.
I liked the boss fight at the end of Mass Effect 2. The giant robot
baby.
Thing.
Giant robot baby.
That when you think it was a baby?
It was just a guy like hanging.
Yeah, it was cool.
He kind of looked like a fetus. Though.
And I really liked the boss fight at the end of the first Dead Space. After the boring marker transport.
We always talk about this. I've blacked that out.
I know.
All I remember is the marker ruined it for you.
But it's the giant like hive thing at the end.
Dead Space is one of the greats, man.
God, Dead Space is so good.
The first one.
Shut up.
Isn't that right, Greg?
Don't poke me with the sharp stick. Just
I agree. The first one
is so much better. I
like the first one more, too. But I like the second one, too. I like the second one, too.
I know
why don't you go play Resident Evil 5, Greg? That's probably the best Resident Evil game, isn't it?
Shut up.
Tomorrow on Xbox Advocate, Alan Wake's American Nightmare comes out. Stephen Hopper from IGN gave it an 8.0. I respectfully disagree with that. So I think that game is awful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
I hated it.
Why?
Really terrible. Nothing of what I loved about Alan Wake is in that game. So, like, really.
You got a flashlight?
Okay. There is that. Now, it's not like a cool, like, survival horror game, you know, with a twist. Now it's like just sort of a dumb action shooty game with terrible dialogue, terrible voice acting, really bad animation on all the characters.
Is this a sequel or an aside? Or what is this?
It's sort of an aside.
This isn't the proper... They're doing a proper sequel, right?
I hope so. But, yeah. This is just sort of a standalone side story.
It's weird. I mean, just coming from a PlayStation-centric point of view, it seems like Microsoft would be more interested in milking Alan Wake a little faster, since it's like one of their only exclusives.
Exactly, considering how few exclusives Microsoft has.
Yeah. I have a code for it. Does someone want a code for it?
Can you read it off now?
Yeah.
Let's give away the game that I just described as terrible.
That will
just what do you think of it, listener? Whoever gets this code deserves to send a 140 character review to GameScoop at IGN.com.
All right, I'm finding this.
Also, send good vibes to Andrew Goldfarb.
Yeah, right. Well,
okay.
Oh, you got it here?
Yeah, do you want to read it?
No, you read it. Okay. This is your big moment. Don't mess this up.
All right, here we go. 3RRHDXYCDW 6HQJ9YG7VW WD64Z.
So long.
Did that catch a niner in there?
Please to enjoy Alan Wake's American Nightmare, whoever ends up with that one.
And who do you agree with? Stephen Hopper or Damon Hatfield? You do the joke.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. Just like
Rex Simpson.
He says, yes, I live in India. I have just bought my PS3, so I want to buy Skyrim. I've heard about the problems.
You just got a PS3, you want to buy Skyrim? All right,
go on. I've heard about the problems, so if I buy the game now, will they be present? I do not have internet, so I can't download the patch, so please help me.
That's a problem.
Yeah, they're going to be present.
How does he listen to the podcast if he has internet?
That's a really good point. How do you explain that, Rexith?
yeah, they'll be present.
You need the patch.
The code on the disc is the same. That's the same. Yeah. That doesn't change. Without being able to download the patch, you might be in trouble.
There are a solid 25 exclusive games that you should probably play before you play Skyrim on PS3. If you're just getting it. But he does have PSN, so he's not going to be able to get half of them. Mm-hmm. But may I recommend Shatter?
No Shatter for him.
Shatter's so good.
It really is.
Those guys. Why didn't they make another Shatter?
Well, they kind of alluded to it when they were talking to us. And then they
were like, we'll have something to announce by the end of the year. And then the end of the year came.
They lied to us.
They straight up lied.
My theory, and I don't know this at all. I mean, we don't talk to Shi at all. Who are the developers? New Zealand developers. Is that Shatter 2 will be on Vita. I mean, that's kind of...
I mean, that would be great. Yeah. Super Stardust is really cool on it.
That'd be all.
Back and forth.
Oh, God, I want Shatter so bad. I every once in a while, I just put it on and I just listen to the music. Just play it a little bit.
It has such a great soundtrack.
Yeah, really one of the best.
Listeners, if you haven't played Shatter on PlayStation Network, correct yourself.
Get it together before you wreck yourself.
Sort it out.
Listener, you look like a sweaty pedo. Sort it out.
That's an inside joke.
It's an up-at-new joke.
Okay.
Episode 2.
Kevin has a question about Vita. How successful do you think Vita's digital video game sales will be versus retail? With Vita really pushing digital sales, we're already seeing some of the limitations of a digital future. Huge games need big memory cards. Stardust is a smaller download, but who's downloading Uncharted?
Andrew Goldfarb raises his hand. Yeah.
We have some anecdotal evidence about how PSN games are doing.
Yeah. Attach rate in Japan.
Yeah, the attach rate in Japan per unit sold at retail is 0.9 games. So less than one game per Vita is being sold when someone buys a Vita, which indicates that people are buying their game, if that makes any sense. So people, in other words, less than one game per Vita sold indicates that people are buying their games on PSN or that people aren't playing any games on Vita, which is both are entirely possible.
I'm just going to buy this and sit on it till something comes out.
But I assume that games are selling okay on PSN. I would say, my guess, half of the games being sold on Vita are being downloaded on PS3 and then transferred to your Vita.
That's why I'm excited for the Vita. I got the biggest memory card. I would happily buy an even bigger one. Like, I want to download every game and not have to, like, carry around it. But, like, those cartridges are small. I'm going to lose them. I know myself too well.
I feel like an idiot every day when I'm waiting for the Muni. I'm like, what do I need to play today? And then I open up my little zip pouch and I pull them all out and I'm juggling them in the street. Like, anything could happen. It's like, I foolishly bought a 16 gigabyte one from Japan at the Japanese launch to use here. And now I keep trying to pawn it off on other people so I can then buy the 32. Because I just want to have everything ready to go right there.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited for. I just want to be downloading things and not have to worry about it. And if it fills up someday, I can put some stuff on my PS3
that's the whole
and come
thing,
back.
Right? Yeah, it's backing it up and downloading and re-downloading and reinstalling. Yeah. It's not that hard. I think it all comes down to where you live, though. You know, a lot of people don't have access to really good internet, right? Like in the office, we have awesome internet, so it's like, yeah, I will totally buy Uncharted that way and every other game that way. I will try to get them digitally and go through that route. But I understand when I'm on Wi-Fi. Like today, I was trying to do a system update and it said it was going to take 39 minutes or whatever, and I was like, well, fuck that, and I plugged it into the PS3 and it was done in like a fraction of a second, you know what I mean? It was like done. So I get that.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
But may I just say also that Vita is really, really awesome. I'm a well-known PSP skeptic. I mean, I really wasn't into the PSP. I thought it lacked obviously many games, but it was also just a kind of underwhelming weird analog nub and all this shit. But like, the Vita is awesome. It just feels great. It's got dual analog sticks. The games are surprisingly good in the launch library. Like, there's a lot of games, but there are a lot of surprisingly, there are a lot of good games.
Yeah.
I kind of have, I talked to Jack Trenton.
Your boy.
My boy Jack. That interview goes up today.
Who is he for the people?
He's a CEO, president of SCEA. So he's calling the shots, as it were. The hot shots, six. and he seems cautiously optimistic, I think, about how it's going to do. And my personal prediction is that I think the Vita is going to be just fine. I know a lot of people like to bust my balls because I said it was going to do much better than it ended up doing in Japan. But I made a guess. I was wrong.
You put it out Happens. There.
I did. I made
you, you didn't sit on the bench like some Michael Jordan. You got out there and no. you played.
When he played for the Cavs, yeah. right?
I think it's actually going to do well. They announced this week a Call of Duty is definitely coming this year.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Like they
well,
seem
no.
to be.
I mean, to be fair, Call of Duty always came to the DS, and I don't think that was like
yeah, but like it's very yeah. dual sticks and yeah. everything yeah, else online functionality.
And plus, it's just like I don't know. Like I'm unbelievably excited for the Vita. Like tomorrow can't come fast enough because like everyone's had it in the office forever, and I've just been sitting here with my games and my memory cards card, yeah, waiting. But no, I'm really excited, and I think they seem to be setting it up for, you know, last time Japan is what made the PSP, they're setting it up for more success in the West. I think, honestly, like with a Call of Duty, with a couple more things coming, like it could do, like it has an Uncharted title. Like that's way more pointing towards Western audiences than Asia. So
it'll be interesting to see what happens once it gets in the wild. I think it's one of those things where people are skeptical all of it all the time. And then when people actually sit there and play with it, it seems like everybody likes it. Like everybody who reviewed a game for us for launch, you know, I had Steven do one from the Xbox team. I had Jack do one. They all came away and I was like, cool. And I'm like, you know, like usually when I give people codes or lend out a PS3 for a review or something, it's they just give it back. They don't care what happens to it. And I came to take the Vitas back and they're all like, oh, okay. And I'm like, do you care about your profile? They're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, you can back it up this way. And like Steven backed it up to his PS3. Peter did, so that when they buy their own Vitas, they can easily download their profile and be ready to go pick up where they left off. Mm. So that was an interesting little
anecdote. It's more of like the handheld I pictured as a kid, like the really like what it is on my system at home. I have it on the go.
Yeah,
you weren't picturing the Atari Lynx.
The Nomad.
That was it. Yeah.
The Nomad was kind of a ubiquitous thing with the Genesis, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't really expensive.
It was just a portable Genesis, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it used the same cartridges, right?
Yeah. So you got what you got, yeah. basically, which is kind of cool. But are you going to get a Vita?
I'm not going to buy one right now.
No.
But there's games on it that I want to play, for sure. I want to play Disgaea 3 again.
Shinobito 2 doesn't
do not play Shinobito 2.
No, I don't play that. I wanted to play Hot Shots, but Clint didn't like it as much as.
Yeah, he had a difficulty thing as far as like now you have to get gold stars in every tournament before you can progress to the next like tier.
I just love those games, and I haven't played like a Camelot golf game in so long.
Yeah.
Years and years. So
I'm a big fan too, and I started playing it, but I only got a little bit in because I've been doing so many reviews on my own. And what I found disappointing as an old Callback fan is that they changed the customization from what it used to be. Remember like on PSP or just old Hot Shots games in general, right? You could like piece by piece customize person, put sunglasses on them,
you'd like,
and then change their hair.
Stuff, right,
yeah, exactly.
If I remember correctly.
And at least from my really, you know, a real shallow dive on it, it seems like you can only unlock full outfits. So like you can, you know, unlock a new pantsuit or something like that rather than go through and choose the pants, choose the shirt, choose like the little stuff you want.
Remember when you reviewed Hot Shots Tennis?
I do.
I even remember us sitting at your desk in the old office and trying to get good upskirt shots of the characters.
That's what we do. That's what we do right here.
Good old days.
That was I really hope they bring another Hot Shots Tennis out. That was a fun game too. But I hope again they let me customize everything.
Hot Shots Golf is the best selling Vita game. So
in Japan.
Yeah. So hopefully that will be a sign that we'll get more of those kinds of
it'll be interesting to see what's the best selling game here.
It's gotta be Uncharted, right?
You think
I would assume so, yeah. Digitally,
if we can get digital numbers, it's gonna be interesting to see
it'll probably be Stardust.
Yeah, what Stardust and Monsters or whatever. Mutant Aliens Attack, whatever it is.
Oh, Escape Plan will sell better than that game.
Mutant Blobs Attack. they will, but I mean, that's the cheapest game. You figure, you know, I mean, $8 for that game and it's awesome. I gave it a 9. And then Stardust got a 9.5 and it's $10, right?
Yeah. And then the DLC is 8.
I wonder how like Luminous. I'm very excited for Luminous like as a downloadable because that's the kind of game where like I certainly wouldn't want a cartridge. Like that's totally. I want to come back to it and have it at
certainly
all times.
Certainly not, sir.
I said good day.
That's all you had to say about that. Okay.
Just because it feels like it should be a downloadable game, but it's $40.
Oh no! I mean, whatever.
It's way too expensive.
It's way too expensive.
It's a hefty price.
But the point I was just making was like that's a game that like I see myself like, oh, I'm in the mood to play this, like, and just wanting it whenever versus, like,
I agree.
Uncharted or whatever else I would keep in the slot.
It's just like Tetris on my PSP Go, where I would go thinking on a plane ride I'm going to play Peace Walker the whole time, and then I'd get bored and stop, and I'd have 10 minutes before, you know, devices off, so I would jump in and do Tetris.
Yeah,
same
exactly.
Thing with
Luminous. I don't turn my devices off when we go on the plane, you know that.
Yeah, I know. Man, you ever hear that story? Of, when were you going? E3, wasn't it?
Oh, that was last year. You were trying to get, like, your
Tetris results
or something. Yeah. Did not care that he was listening to cancer results. She was none too. We were taxiing down the runway, and she's like, "Sir, you have to turn it off." And Kyle's like, "I'm getting." He's all like turned his body away from the aisle and like his head into my shoulder, trying to hide that he's on the phone.
We were like about to like literally taking off when I finally turned the phone up.
It is kind of a dumb law. If if there were really any real serious danger to that, they would not. They just wouldn't let you bring. They wouldn't let people bring.
They would
stuff
like confiscate all your shit.
I loved the ones. I've only had it once, but I loved it. Because at least people in the know that none of this crap matters, right? Like, this doesn't interfere. It's just you want us to pay attention to the flight attendant crap and all that crap. And so we were one time when we were getting ready for takeoff, right? And the captain's like, "All right, I'm prepared for takeoff." And then it was like, you know, we started pulling away from the gate and going down there or whatever. And then he stopped the plane and said, "Oh, I'm getting some interference up here. I know someone's still listening to this song, so we're not going to move the plane until you turn it off."
Oh, my God.
And then
he
waited, like, you know, 30 seconds. He's like, "Thank you. Moving on." I'm like, yeah,
whatever.
Right.
That's crazy.
The flight attendant probably called and were, like, scared these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this guy won't turn his iPad off or some shit.
Exactly. The iPads just are put into sleep mode. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, like,
It's so ridiculous, yeah.
It is foolish.
Yeah, I never actually turned my iPhone off. You know, it's just in my pocket, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, David Aguilar writes in asking, "I was wondering if you guys would want cartridges back instead of discs. I would love that. The feel of it is just awesome. What do you guys say?"
Have fun paying a lot more for your games.
Yeah, and having like a limit, like that was the time when you had to pre-order games because they ran out and it would take like 3 weeks for another run of cartridges to be made.
Yeah, so I know you guys have had, I mean, the used game debate and how much games cost and all that stuff debate. I know you guys have had this on this podcast. We've had it in our own independent forums as well and beyond and on video. But the reason that I'm going to have a little real talk here for all the people for all the people that don't listen to Beyond and don't want to acknowledge a certain fact when they cry about how expensive games are. Is games are actually cheaper than they've ever been. So, you know, when you take into account inflation. The reason
I paid $55 for Bionic Commando on the NES in 1988. Yeah, $55.
So it was gas then.
Probably like 70 cents. So, games are cheaper than they've ever been and a lot of the reason that games are cheaper than they've ever been in real money is because of the disc format. So, you know, when we think back to, especially the greatest way to look at it is the PlayStation and N64 era, because you had both cartridges and discs. In a game like Final Fantasy VII, which was three discs, cost $50 in 1997 money. But if you bought Ocarina of Time, that was more like $60 or $70 on a cartridge. Of course, Phantasy Star IV is my favorite example because that game on Genesis cost $100 in 1995. And those are all based on the cost of the chip and the battery inside, which you don't have to deal with on discs. So you don't want cartridges back unless I would really prefer that people didn't whine even more about how expensive games are, even though they're cheaper than they've ever been. So that would be a good way to make them whine more about how quote-unquote expensive games are.
Yeah, I don't want cartridges back, and I know we beat this drum all the time. I just want everything to go digital. Let's just do it. Let's just get it over with. Right now, I think the Vita has it all in place right now for where we are at the time, right? If you want to go to GameStop and buy the cartridges, have at it. And if you want to download them, here they are. It's like, great. That's what we need to get to with a lot of other things, too.
It's an infrastructure problem, though.
I mean, internet isn't broadband for everybody, and that's going to clog up servers. And yada, yada.
We're a lot further away from solid state than people think they are. We are at least another generation, if not two, away from that. Because when you think about it, it's just not fair to people that are in, you know, Hodunk, whatever. You know,
Hodunk,
whatever.
Hodunk, whatever. Right next to Washington Tacoma Robot.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like I lived in rural areas before, and you know, in Maine and New Hampshire and stuff. And it's, you know, the internet fidelity, I'm sure, is not very good there.
I thought the Vita would be it. I really expected when they announced the NGP, I thought when we finally saw Vita games, it would be all digital. Like, I thought they'd be the first to take the plunge.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
I think they learned something with PSP Go. People were ready to embrace that technology and pay more than the other PSP cost.
It's true.
This is one of our super fans, Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style!
In regards to Vita memory cards, he wonders, do you see the price of memory dropping before the end of the year?
Wow. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
I mean, it's one of those things. Remember how fast memory, if you're old enough to remember the PSP launch, and God, I can't believe I just said that.
Old enough? that's not 10 years ago. I mean,
it was 2004, right?
Anyways,
I'm just saying, how many 7-year-old listeners do we have out there?
No, but like kids who were 12 then and are 17 now. Like,
it wasn't 2005, was it? It was 2004, I thought.
Yeah, March of 2005.
I did my math really badly.
2004 is probably when
in Japan.
Yeah. Anyways, if those things cost a bajillion dollars too, and then, they drop so fast. So.
I mean, the one, Memory Stick Pro Duo was really stupid, but the one thing it had going for it was that at least if you had a Sony camera or whatever, you could also use it. Mm-hmm. Like, Vita memory cards are only for Vita. That sucks.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if, even if we don't see a price drop on the things themselves, I think they'll be bundled way more often. Like, you're already seeing that. Like, Amazon 2 days ago decided to bundle a 4 gig card for free if you pre-ordered the Wi-Fi unit. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of memory cards coming with systems.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be smart once they sell out of all the launch bundles to include all that, to get a case in there and get it all bundled up together. Right. So bundled up so people could just buy it and go.
I think Vita will get a price drop before the end of the year.
For Christmas, probably.
They should.
Yeah. I mean, they can't do it immediately.
Because the 3DS has had a remarkable turnaround. It's actually doing really well now.
Yeah, 3DS is absolutely... I mean, in Japan, 3DS is absolutely obliterating the Vita, which is problematic, except for the fact that PSP is still somewhat popular there, and they're still releasing games for it, but... including games like Lord of Apocalypse, which are on both PSP and Vita in Japan and only on Vita here. They're being every week. It's about 5-1. Now, you know, one of the things I did talk to Jack Tretton about, which was really interesting, was Nintendo's coup in December, which they pulled out of nowhere. And it was a brilliant move, which was to release Monster Hunter, Mario Land, and Mario Kart basically within a 2 week. Within like 2 weeks of the Vita launch. And that's what destroyed the Vita. So it's all about games. Now, if games are indicative of how a system does, then look at the 3DS's terrible launch lineup, which was fucking abysmal.
Right.
And, you know, when you're playing like a game like Steel Diver and pretending you're enjoying it.
That was really bad. I bought that in Pilot Wings. I regret it.
And now you look at Vita's launch lineup, which, you know, like, you know, I think back to all of the launch games. Now, NES had a pretty sizable launch library and you know, some other, you know.
Wow, the NES? You're going all the way back there?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, like,
that's directly comparable to Vita.
Well, I'm just thinking about, like, launch lineups in general. Like, NES was pretty good. Super Nintendo had, like, Pilot Wings and stuff like that. N64 was abysmal. They had two games for like 2 months. PlayStation had like, I don't know, Jet Moto and Battle Arena.
More often than not, launch sucks. Console launches are terrible.
Yeah, they're terrible. Yeah. PS2's was really bad. I mean, that was when I was playing Summoner, and I'm like, oh, this is okay.
Silent Scope. Came home with Silent Scope. Yeah, like, oh, I'm going to save the president's daughter.
Playing Fantavision and shit. But when you look at Vita's launch lineup, like, it might be the best launch lineup in history of gaming. And it's not only in terms of the fact that there's 28 games, I think, but in the fact that like half of them at least are good. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's a lot to be excited about. So if games are going to push it in the West, then I think the Vita is actually going to be okay. But there's still going to be a reason. I think Sony probably wants to drop the price now, but they can't because it sends the wrong signal. So
one thing that's worth pointing out, and depending on what day you're listening to this, I'm probably going to sound dumb if this ends up being wrong. But so today, Nintendo, via a swap note press release, announced that tomorrow morning they have a Nintendo Direct press event, which is basically the timing is perfect to be the first thing that will be reported of the day that the Vita officially launches in North America. Mm. And so they're simulcasting it in North America and Japan. So Reggie is doing a separate conference, and then in Japan they're doing a conference. Listen. And they, you know, something is coming.
Look. It's look.
look.
Yeah, look. Exactly.
That's what it was.
They could theoretically be announcing, I mean, there have been a ton of rumors about the next Pokemon game. There have been a ton of rumors about Metroid. No one knows what Retro was working on. Like, they could be announcing something specifically to undercut the Vita tomorrow. And it'll be very interesting.
Is that what you think is going to happen? Is it going to be something cool or is it going to be something dumb?
So the last Nintendo Direct conference was unbelievably dumb. It was about girls RPG in Japan, and I watched Awada demo it for 45 minutes. I think this one could be something big. I mean, I think, like, Reggie personally was like, oh, trust me, like, there's some news coming. And, like, the fact that they're doing it in North America.
Is what he told you?
Yeah, he did tell me via SpotCast. So on the SpotCast press release, it a sound clip of Reggie saying,
"No,
yeah, he goes,
the press release. Look, you want to watch this."
He goes, "Hello, this is Reggie from Nintendo of America," and then his handwritten note pops up. That's like, "I have some exciting news to share with you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Pacific." Blah blah blah. So like, they're announcing something. It'll be very interesting to see if it's bullshit or if it's something
probably cool.
Pokemon. Could
gotta
be.
Catch 'em all.
All right. This is listener Trevor Leek. He says, I was hoping you can help me out here. I'm in a bit of a Spanish pickle.
Okay.
What the hell does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
I can't help you with that.
I like dill pickles.
In 5 days, I'm heading to Spain with my bike, my guitar, and some clothing and such. I decided to do the smartest thing anyone my age could really do, drop out of community college in Portland, Oregon, to bike around Europe playing guitar and writing music. Right now, my travel itinerary is very loose, but I plan on hitting every major European country. Anyway, I was hoping you all could put a call out to the extraordinarily hospitable listeners of this fine podcast to see if they would be kind enough to take me in for a night. Right now, I'm worried that traveling the way I plan to won't be a good way to meet people, and to really make this trip a success, I need to meet locals.
Let me know how many times you're sexually assaulted.
I know. Have you seen the movie Hostel? Anyway, this is Trevor Leek, who's writing in. He says, to contact me, use trevor.on.the.air@gmail. Or they can message him over Facebook.
So his name's Trevor?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm just going to throw some statistics at Trevor real quick.
He sounds sweet.
Yeah, a little beyond reference. I'm a little concerned that he said that the smart thing to do is to drop out of college.
He was being sarcastic.
Yeah, but just so he knows, the unemployment rate for people that have a college degree is like 4.5%. The people without a college degree is something like in the teens. Mm. So you want to be very careful about the choices you're making in an economy like this, Trevor. Just throwing it out there. If you know, I hope you enjoy yourself in Europe, but I hope that, you know.
It was community college in Oregon. You know, I think he's going to go to Europe and find himself. And then maybe he'll come back ready to get back in the game.
Is he shipping his bike out there? That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
I'm going to bet right now that 5 years from now on GameScoop, we will be premiering Trevor's debut single that he writes while he's in Europe.
Probably won't be that long.
Remember when a bunch of Americans went to Europe to find themselves in the 1940s and fucking Jesus. Wrecked shop?
Oh, my God.
Those were the days.
That was their whole goal. That was their whole goal. Go there and find themselves.
We've lost our way. I don't know who I am anymore.
Grab a Bayonetta. We'll figure it out.
A Bayonetta?
Yeah. Video games have ruined me.
This is Vincent Key. Recently, I've been playing Super Stardust HD.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Which I am loving. My dad, having seen me playing this, has asked me if you can get a Space Invaders-style game in a similar vein to Stardust. Do you know of any on PS3 which are good that I could get at a reasonable cost?
Get Space Invaders Infinity Gene. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's a Colin reviewed that one.
And, yeah, I don't even remember what I gave it. Liked it.
It's like you gave it like an 8, I think.
Yeah.
But it's like an intense modern Space Invaders.
But each level switches around too, so different stuff's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not even remotely as good as Super Stardust, but it's good.
Yeah, it's shooting.
It is good.
Yeah. Wow, his dad's gonna be so excited. There was like an answer to that question. Like that never happened.
This is Micah Hyman. Unfortunate last name.
Lol. Unfortunate first name. You don't have a beard, Micah Hyman. You get out of here.
For unspecified reasons, I have $20 for Amazon that I must spend. I prefer...
I murdered someone. All he had in his wallet was an Amazon gift card.
I prefer not to spend too much of my own money, so I thought I would buy an older game. What older game for PlayStation 3 would you recommend I get? I like good single-player experiences, preferably no guns.
Ooh.
Final Fantasy 13. $13.99.
Is there a gun blade?
Infamous. You probably get it from his price.
I looked up some prices on Amazon. Arkham Asylum can be got for $18.15.
Batman hates guns too.
It's true.
Now BioShock has like shooty, but it's only $14.
It's also an excellent game.
So worth it. Yeah.
And Demon's Souls is $19.34.
There you go.
Overrated, but some people really enjoy it.
Some people love that game. And since it's a fantasy game, there's no guns in it.
But there are crossbows.
Yeah.
So be careful. Maybe he doesn't like projectile weapons.
Maybe.
Missiles.
Yeah. Cody Kirkland writes in to say, in the most recent podcast, a listener asked the question, cats versus dogs. When I heard this, I was excited because I thought you were going to discuss a battle between feline and canine. Imagine my disappointment when you guys started talking about the cuteness and companionship. What I want to know is this. In a battle of, say, 500 cats and dogs, all of various but equal sizes... Who would win?
The cats would win.
If the dogs come in all different sizes, the cats also come in all different sizes.
So if there's a Great Dane, they have a tiger.
Exactly, yeah. They get wolves and coyotes and stuff, which are formidable. Uh-huh. So we get, you know, I say we because I'm a cat guy.
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah.
We get the tigers and the lions and things of this nature.
Big cats are bigger than the big dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if you're putting lions and tigers in the field, I'm going cats. Cats are going to win that one.
Speaking about wrecking shop in Europe in 1940s, man, the cats would just be wrecking shop against the dogs, no doubt about it. It wouldn't even be fucking close.
You're going to like this one, Greg.
Oh, good.
This is from Nick. He sent in a good photo.
Oh, good.
Since I've been listening to the podcast since 2006, I wanted to say thanks for many good times. I just got a job in the gaming industry.
What?
And listening to your podcast helps me to stay sharp on the current developments in gaming. So thanks for that. For Greg, here's a picture of my blue-eyed dachshund Frank chilling on my lap while watching some TV.
Oh man, Frank looks stoned.
It's a very cute photo, Nick.
Yeah, very. What did he say, where he's working or what he's doing?
He didn't say.
Okay.
Finally, last email comes from Adam Dolman, our Winnipegger GameScoop fan. He says, I'm writing in because I wanted to share with you all my GameScoop origin story.
Origins.
Last summer, I was backpacking across Peru and Ecuador with my girlfriend.
I was playing guitar and hostile I stopped them. I said, to hell with you, community college in Akron, Ohio.
It was an awesome time. boring, but I was out of the loop in gaming news for about a month at that point. So when we got to a hostel with my Wi-Fi, I pulled out my iPod Touch and started searching for gaming podcasts on iTunes. I downloaded a bunch of random ones, and then we left for an 8-hour bus ride through the mountains of Ecuador. A few hours into our trip, the bus ground to a halt. A hush fell over the passengers. All that could be heard was the sounds of a Spanish dubbing of Universal Soldado playing through the bus's speakers. Does anyone know what that
no,
is?
No, I have no idea.
Universal Soldier, the Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Outside, it was pitch black. Inside, it wasn't much brighter. My girlfriend grew restless. What's happening, she asked. I don't know. Let me check it out, I said. I MacGyvered open my window and poked my head out. Turns out there had been a landslide, which had covered the only route to the small mountain town we were headed for. The bus was trying to back up, but was having a miserable time of it, considering the narrowness of the cliff we were on. I decided to take my mind off the idea of pitching headlong into a ravine, and I started listening to the podcasts. Most of them sucked, but I spotted one that I had downloaded, IGN GameScoop episode 212.
Oh, good one.
And I thought to myself, hey, I know IGN. They've got the Jessica Chobot on my Xbox dashboard telling me how to get those achievements. So I hit play. What a great episode. I was greeted by Damon laughing his way through the intro, something that immediately characterized the show itself. I was introduced to a whole new world of gaming podcastdom. I learned so many things about the crew in that one episode. Greg is a goofball who enjoys taking his shirt off. Casey Lynch had just taken over as editor-in-chief. Ryan Geddes was leaving. Good. The gravity of this never hit me until I caught up on old GameScoop episodes, but this was a rather bittersweet moment in retrospect. And I was introduced to fellow Canadian Charles Onyet, despite the fact that he wasn't actually on the podcast. Because we talk about it a lot.
Yeah, we love Charles.
What a great introduction to the world of GameScoop. Therefore, I humbly submit that episode 212 is one of the best episodes of GameScoop that I could have accidentally stumbled upon.
When I woke up in the ravine with my wife's bloody body next to me and thousands of dead Ecuadorians.
Thousands of them.
It was a big bus.
Jeez.
Adam ends with, I hope you're all doing well. Thanks for the mini laughs. I hope you enjoyed my GameScoop origin story.
It was good. Very good.
Thanks for sharing that with
us, Adam. I did enjoy that.
All the more reason not to go travel abroad.
I know, right?
There's great things to see all over our nation.
Colin, like dog versus cat battles all over the place.
Colin ventured out of the country for the first time just last year.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Was it worth it?
Was
it worth
it? Oh, it was great. Yeah. It totally changed my
But you didn't go on some backpacking ravine.
Oh, no. I only go to places where I can stay in a hotel.
How did you describe the service at German restaurants? Unacceptable. What was it?
Oh, no, heinous, maybe?
No, the word you used is like... Man, what is the word that he uses?
I remember. It was something, and you're like,
absurd or...
Obscene or something like
obscene,
that.
Yeah, some hyperbole that I always like to pull out. The service was horrendous, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's...
But
that's
I enjoyed our time in Germany very much.
We did.
We had good really company. Good yeah. We had a good time at the show. I enjoyed the German people.
Mm-hmm.
that huge church, or whatever the hell
dome.
That was. Yeah, the dome. Oh, that was cool. Something else. It's we awesome. Don't have anything that old in the United States, I'll tell you what, Greg.
Yeah.
That's all the scoops we have for this week. I think you're right, Greg.
I told you it was going to be a good one.
It was a good episode.
You picked the good ones, listeners.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Andrew. I leave you this week with a new song by Downlink, one of my favorite dubstep producers and DJs. The song is called Party Alarm. Enjoy. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
IGN GamesCoop.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.